We have looked at the nature of the limited bilateral defence cooperation program we have had, and that has been suspended.
Australia acts against Myanmar military. It's Wednesday, March 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, staying at home for a year. Afghan women endure. Therapy for the virus. Challenges in reopening schools. The message in magic. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia has acted against Myanmar's military in response to the country's escalating violence following the toppling of the elected government. We have this report from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Australia says it's gravely concerned about the repression of protests in Myanmar since the democratically elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi was ousted by the military in early February. It's urged Myanmar security forces to exercise restraint and refrain from violence against civilians. Mass demonstrations have been held across the Southeast Asian country. The United Nations has said more than 50 people have been killed so far. In response, Australia has cut defence programs in Myanmar and has said humanitarian aid would be directed to the people. Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne.
We have looked at the nature of the limited bilateral defence cooperation program we have had, and that has been suspended. We have also looked at the development program and development support that we have provided and redirected that with an absolute focus on the immediate needs of some of the most vulnerable and poor in Myanmar, which is one of the poorest countries in ASEAN.
Payne said the decision was made after extensive consultations with our international partners, particularly our ASEAN neighbours, Japan and India. Canberra is also concerned for the safety of Sean Turnell, an Australian academic who's been a key economic aide to Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. The National League for Democracy Party won a landslide victory in an election last November with more than 80% of the votes. The military has detained Suu Kyi and Turnell for more than a month along with others. Myanmar, also known as Burma, became independent from Britain in 1948. It was controlled by a repressive military government from 1962 to 2011. A government effectively led by Suu Kyi came to power after elections in 2015. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Be sure to stop by our website at voanews.com or join us on Twitter and Facebook for more on this and all the stories you hear on VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar military government continues brutal crackdown on protesters. Myanmar protesters concerned by military in attempt to quash dissent. Female farmers protest India's agricultural laws. Members of Quad Nations, the United States, Japan, Australia, and India, to meet virtually later this week. In South Korea, universal basic income is having a pandemic moment. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also join us on Twitter and our website, voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States is marking 1 year since the first stay-at-home orders went into effect because of the coronavirus pandemic. But returning to normal is happening very slowly, as Michelle Quinn reports.
1 year ago, cities throughout the United States began to shut down because of the virus. Since then, more than a half million lives have been lost to the infection and nearly 29 million cases recorded, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. The nation is now in a different place. President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion economic relief package is moving ahead, having passed the Senate with no Republican support. The bill now heads to the House of Representatives. A third vaccine, this one from Johnson & Johnson, is being rolled out behind ones by Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna. But there are concerns that some states, such as Texas and Mississippi, are moving too quickly, lifting mask mandates and fully opening up restaurants, saying it's up to people to take steps to keep safe, not the government. Some public health officials are sounding the alarm.
Given how close we are to the finish line, anybody who gets infected today and dies in 3 or 4 weeks is somebody who would have gotten vaccinated a month from now. This is why it's urgent to just keep going for a little bit longer.
Governors are setting goals for when it's okay to lift health orders, requiring masks. Ohio will lift its mask mandate when the state records 50 cases per 100,000 people. It's currently at 179 cases, said Governor Mike DeWine.
With the vaccine, we're now on the offense. That's the great thing. But in Ohio, we can't give up the defense. We have found that these masks work exceedingly well.
One area of contention is schools, which are gradually reopening, with about 27% of students nationwide still in a virtual-only learning mode. There is a big push in many cities to vaccinate teachers and staff and get students back to the classroom. In Cleveland, Ohio, the teachers' union voted to stick with remote learning for now, despite the governor's goal of a March 1st return date. Governor DeWine says he remains optimistic.
If you go back at the beginning of this year, half of our kids in Ohio were totally remote. Today, 95% of them are in class. So we're excited about where we are.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, about 1,000 coup protesters marched on a Mandalay street for a few minutes before dispersing to avoid a confrontation with police. More than 50 protesters have died. More than 1,850 have been arrested during the government's crackdown on coup protests. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, about 52% of women in Afghanistan have experienced violence in their homes. That's according to the World Health Organization. VOA's Nishaba Ashana has the story of an Afghan woman who was disfigured by her husband but moved on to a better life and to advocate for women's rights. Bejan Hamdard narrates the story.
At just 15, Shakila Zarin was married off in her native Afghanistan. At 16, her husband shot her in the face, scarring her for life.
Sometimes I wish to wake up to see a miracle that my face has been fixed. But when I wake up, this miracle isn't there.
But she did not stop fighting for safety, freedom, and a better life. In 2013, Zarin was granted asylum in Canada, where she fulfilled a dream.
I was stopped from going to school. But after getting asylum in Canada, I got my dream of going back to school. On the first day of school, when I sat next to my classmates, I cried. However, that was tears of joy.
Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau met Zarin and promised his full support.
Apart from many things, the Canadian government's biggest favor to me has been providing me treatment for my face. They have supported 15 surgeries so far.
Zarin says despite her husband's brutal actions, her voice didn't matter much in Afghanistan. Now she's fighting for thousands of unheard voices through public speaking.
Here in Canada, I'm a public speaker. I demand justice for those women facing violence, and I tell the painful story of my life and other Afghan women's lives who suffered like me to the whole world.
Zarin has the backing of groups who are also fighting against domestic violence.
We gave her some support in how to prepare for a presentation, and she's become very active in that area. She's very fearlessly telling her story, not only in Canada, but in countries around the world, talking about the issue of violence against women and the impact it had in her own life.
Zarin says communities must unite to combat this global problem.
Shakila cannot change the world all alone. All the women who face violence should come together. We should not cry and stay back in our homes because it does not solve our problems. Instead, we should be united against those who are involved in violence against women.
For Noshaba Ashna in Vancouver, Canada, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. A fire at India's Eastern Railway headquarters in Kolkata Monday night left 9 dead. Police and railway officials and firefighters are among the deceased. The cause of the fire is still being investigated. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. In the fight against COVID, some medical centers are offering antibody therapies as a way to keep patients with mild COVID-19 symptoms from developing a more severe illness. Anusha Vetsian visited one of these infusion centers.
That's right. They can say, I love my mother. That's what I'm saying. How's that? And I'm glad she's okay.
Diana Gumas, daughter of an 86-year-old COVID survivor, did everything in her power to protect her elderly mother, who suffers from leukemia, from getting COVID. But despite all the precautions, in January, Diana's sister was diagnosed with COVID-19, and a day later, her mom's test result also came back positive.
I was telling them what to do. Just in case.
That's right, yes. You know, it's terrible, but you're thinking might not make it, right?
Right.
She's giving us all her instructions about if things didn't go well, but...
They call what happened later a miracle, a treatment with monoclonal antibodies. Today, doctors use the infusion with Regeneron and Bamlanivimab, a monoclonal antibody developed by AB Celebra Biologics and Eli Lilly to treat COVID-19. Monoclonal antibodies are like the ones in your body, but are made in a lab and can be injected into your bloodstream. They help stop diseases from becoming severe while your body ramps up its own defenses. Permission to use the treatment was only received in the U.S. in the fall of 2020, and it is strictly for people over the age of 12. Mandatory requirements for getting the treatment are a positive COVID test, mild to moderate progression of the disease, and a medical history that would mean life-threatening complications if the COVID symptoms became more severe.
They gave me excellent advice, told me exactly how to apply online, and it was just fantastic. And within 2 days, I think my mother was approved and receiving an infusion, so yes. It was amazing.
Barbara Gumas recovered after 10 days of the infusion treatment. Fatigue and the loss of taste and smell were her only symptoms. Isolation turned out to be the hardest part of the whole experience.
Very unbeknownst to me, I opened my door of my apartment, and there is a big sign of quarantine that said, no one should come in without protective clothing.
One of the largest infusion centers in the state of Maryland is located in Baltimore. Journalists are not allowed inside due to the risk of getting infected. Every week, up to 400 COVID patients can get treated here, and the process takes just under 3 hours. Only about 10% of the 1,200 patients who have gotten their infusion at this center have had side effects, in most cases, fever and chills.
People who have chronic disease, be it their heart disease if they're 55 and older, hypertension, and COPD if they're 55 and older, if they have diabetes any age, if they're obese any age, if they're immunosuppressed, again, any age, and immunocompromised any age, we believe that these patients have the highest risk of having severe COVID And so in selecting those populations, we're providing a treatment that has potential to benefit those that have the highest risk of having a bad outcome.
The antibody treatment is new and still not thoroughly researched, yet doctors are cautiously optimistic. One can get a COVID vaccine 90 days after the antibody treatment. Barbara can't wait.
And then I called the facility back and said, oh, exactly what day did I get the infusion? And so I've been looking at that on my calendar.
While this treatment right now is exclusively for people with underlying health conditions, it could turn out to be a useful tool in the fight against COVID. Anusha Vitisyan for VOA News, Baltimore, Maryland.
Making headlines in Asia, after being asked about a possible cabinet reshuffle by a journalist at a weekly news conference, Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha told reporters to mind their own business, grabbed a container of disinfectant, and sprayed the front row. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has declared that all public schools in the state must begin offering some kind of in-person learning by March 15th. Alicia Bacalets visited a school in Alexandria to see how it is preparing to reopen following the months-long pandemic shutdown. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Virginia public schools have been closed for almost a year, but starting on March 15th, they're coming back to life. But it won't be anything like a normal educational experience. Students will have to keep their distance from classmates, wear a face mask all day, and get a temperature check before entering the building. Miranda Turner, mother of three, says she's happy to live by these new rules.
My son is in kindergarten, and part of kindergarten is not just learning how to read and write. It's learning how to socialize, how to be around other kids, how to follow the rules, how to be in a classroom with a bunch of other kids. And none of that can happen when these kids are on the iPads.
For almost a year, Turner, together with other parents, has been pressing for schools to reopen. Finally, in February, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam said it was time to get back to school.
Well, the governor made it clear that he wanted to see school divisions start bringing students back into the buildings for in-person instruction. The governor recognizes that this extraordinary situation is certainly taking a toll on children academically in terms of their social and emotional well-being.
Parents still have a choice. Their children can continue learning online, or they can switch to hybrid education, which means 2 days in school and 3 days at home.
So in a classroom, traditionally, you may have enough furniture to accommodate 25 to 28 students. Now, based on the size of our classrooms, the square footage, and the requirement for social distancing, we can only accommodate around 12 to 13 students in a traditional classroom at a time.
And there are also strict new rules about how to handle kids who may show any signs of COVID.
We have isolation rooms in place for our staff, and these are locations where if a student experiences any type of symptoms during the school day, we have a place to put them in isolation so that they're away from the general public. And then we also have a communications protocol. So if we ever have a positive, how we communicate that information out and how the contact tracing occurs with our health departments.
Other measures. Teachers shouldn't approach the kids unless they really need to, and each lesson would be broadcast for those students at home on that particular day.
Our students will have a certified or certificated teacher in front of them or a classroom monitor that will support the students should they have a virtual teacher.
The virtual teacher is a necessity because many teachers are afraid to come back to the classroom because of concerns they will be infected with COVID. Members of the Virginia Education Association believe schools should only be opened after all the teachers get vaccinated. The organization didn't respond to VOA's request for a comment, but but the Virginia Department of Education says, according to the guidance from health officials, it is safe to head back to the classroom.
Everything we've seen and everything we've heard from the CDC and other experts is that, you know, the vaccination of all staff, you know, is not a precondition that must be met before you can begin.
The Virginia chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics also supports reopening schools. So far, about half of the students' families in the Alexandria School District have agreed to the hybrid learning system. It's an important step toward establishing a new post-pandemic normal. For Леся Бакалец in Alexandria, Virginia, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Magicians dazzle both the eye and mind of their audience. VOA's Marsha James spoke to one performer who tells us in his own words how his hobby turned into a career and the importance of using his platform to address greater social issues.
Is magic real or is magic an illusion? I'd like to show you what comes to mind. Just as an example, and we're just going to use these three half dollars right here. Focus on this first one. Three coins, two hands, no sleeves, no bracelets.
Randy Shine is a magician in Vienna, Virginia.
So you think of things happening that's impossible, but you're making the impossible possible. And you're also creating astonishment. So when you think about magic, you have to think about creativity and, most importantly, making the impossible possible.
Magician Randy Shine continues to tell his story.
So I got started in magic, not when I was young like most people. I got started in magic when I was in graduate school at Penn State studying health education research. It was just a hobby for me, something to do on a just to pass the time, card tricks. Me and a group of friends, we used to get together and do card tricks. I was performing in Iowa one time. It was at a college campus, but it was 2 hours outside, 2.5 hours outside of Des Moines, Iowa. I get there, I set up, I'm behind the curtain, I peek out, 500 people here. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to say. As soon as the MC announced me, I walked on stage. The first words out of my mouth is, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to the show. When I got off the plane this morning, the black population increased by 100%. Now, it came off as a joke, but as they say, there's truth in comedy. And it resonated with everyone because they realized, wow, this is not a diverse town. I believe that every artist should use their platform to talk about greater issues beyond their art. So there's some elements in my show that are subtle, and then some that are not subtle. There's a saying by a famous magician named Joseph Dunninger. He says, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, no explanation will suffice. So, is magic real? Or is it an illusion? That's up to you to decide.
Magician Randy Shine in his own words. We thank VOA's Marsha James for bringing us this story. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening today. Even though our program is coming to a conclusion, you can join us again at the same time tomorrow. And in the meantime, we're online. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under the name VOA Asia. We also like to thank those who help bring the program to you each and every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.